Good morning, everyone. We're going to call this meeting of the House Climate and Energy Finance and Policy Committee to order. We'll begin by taking the roll.
Chair Long.
Present.
Vice Chair Akam.
Present.
Minority Lead Swadzinski.
Present.
Representative Bierman.
Present.
Representative Bowe. Representative Bowe. Representative Christensen.
Present.
Representative Franson.
Present.
Representative Grunhagen. Representative Grunhagen.
Yep, Glenn's here.
Representative Hollins.
Present.
Representative Hornstein.
Present.
Representative Igo.
Present.
Representative Lee.
Present.
Representative Lippert.
Present.
Representative Liz Lagarde.
Present.
Representative Meckland.
Present.
Representative Munson.
Present.
Representative Stevenson.
Quorum is present. We have minutes from January 19th, 2021. Representative Akam, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have. I move approval.
All right, Representative Akam moves approval of the minutes from January 19th, 2021. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 The minutes are approved. We have a busy schedule this morning. We are going to be doing an informational hearing on the 100% clean energy bill. We've had a lot of interest from the public and from testifiers, and unlike prior years, we are time constrained with our committee meeting time, and so we're not going to be going over. So as a result, I'm going to postpone my comments on the bill until next Thursday when we bring the bill back up formally in front of the committee to take amendments. And I'll ask that questions directed towards me be held to then. And today we're just going to be taking testimony from the public. I've invited three testifiers. So we'll hear from those three testifiers and then we'll take questions if there are any for those testifiers until 11 a.m. at the latest, and then that will give us a full hour to get through as many of our public testifiers as we can. And so with that, I would like to turn it over first to Grace Arnold, Temporary Commissioner for the Department of Commerce.
All right, I think I successfully worked the mute button. Thank you, Chair Long and members, for the opportunity to be in front of you today. As Chair Long mentioned, my name is Grace Arnold. I'm the temporary commissioner for the Department of Commerce. I'm excited to be here to present this proposal, which leads Minnesota to 100% carbon-free electricity by 2040. First, I'd like to thank you, Chair Long, for your leadership on this issue and for your partnership on this package. It's been a collaborative effort between you, the administration, and Senator Friends, and that's been really wonderful. This proposal provides a historic opportunity to create a better future for our state. The bill creates a carbon-free electricity standard for Minnesota's utilities to generate 100% of their electricity from carbon-free sources by 2040. Minnesotans throughout the state are prioritizing clean energy and a clean environment. They are experiencing the dramatic impacts of climate change in many ways, such as higher property insurance rates, risk to crop yields due to increased spring flooding, and higher energy burdens for Minnesotans because of longer winters and hotter summers. Minnesotans know that to change course, we need immediate action. That's why Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan are championing the move to 100% carbon-free electricity by 2040. This plan will drastically cut air pollution while creating jobs and economic opportunities for people across Minnesota. This proposal maximizes investments in the lowest cost energy while building in protections for reliability. We know that after years of declining prices, clean energy is now the most competitive resource, and that means savings for consumers. By establishing a carbon-free electricity standard of 100% by 2040, is ambitious, but it builds on the successes we already have achieved and extends the path to clean energy that we're already on. The 100% standard sets a destination but does not dictate a specific roadmap for getting there. It allows flexibility for utilities to choose their own best course to arrive at that destination. This policy also prioritizes well-paying jobs, enabling Minnesota workers to be an essential part of the solution. Already, around 60,000 Minnesotans work in clean energy, with about 40% of those jobs in greater Minnesota. Manufacturers from Rochester to Alexandria are adding workers, and main streets are revitalized as buildings are updated and made more efficient. As we build this clean energy economy, we can expect this number to go much higher. Minnesota's current electric generation system is aging and at a critical juncture. In the next two decades, approximately 70% of the electricity in the state will be up for retirement or consideration. This bill will help ensure retiring power plants are replaced with carbon-free energy resources, providing the cleanest and lowest cost energy to Minnesota's consumers. Minnesota is known as a national leader in setting and achieving clean energy goals, and now is the opportunity to take this leadership to the next level. This bill will not only ensure reliable, affordable, and sustainable electricity for Minnesota, it will also give the state a cleaner, healthier environment and a strong clean energy economy with new jobs and business opportunities across the state. So I'd like to thank you again, Chair Long, and members for having us here today. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Arnold, and thank you to Governor Walz for his leadership on clean energy and for his partnership on this bill. It is greatly appreciated. We are going to hear from our next two testifiers that I've invited, and then we'll open it up for questions for those three individuals. We're next going to hear from Dr. Emil Fadke, who's Energy Analysis and Environmental, works for the Energy Analysis and Environmental Impacts Division with Lawrence Berkman National Labs, and he is the author of a groundbreaking study on the path towards 90% clean energy by 2035, which has been gotten widespread attention across the country, and thought it would be very helpful to hear from Dr. Fadke this morning, given that the bill that we're hearing today matches that target. So Dr. Fadke, welcome to the committee.
All right, good morning, everybody, and thanks for inviting me. It's such, it's really exciting to see this kind of ambition and urgent desire to act on climate change. But I'm going to tell you something a little different. That it's important to act on climate, but what we are finding in terms of our research is that clean energy also has become the economic choice. And unfortunately, I was not able to share my slides beforehand as requested. But I'm just going to share them anyways, so bear with me. And I will just walk through the key conclusions, but I'm here to answer any kind of follow-up questions. Is that okay? All right. So, just bear with me for a second. I'm just trying to get sharing working. Okay. All right, here you go. So this is the study we did for the entire United States, looking at the cost benefit of going 90% clean by 2035. That was kind of the primary focus. But the way the analysis was done is that we do have detailed representation of the US power system. So it has significant details on Minnesota as well. I will give you the motivation / bottom line conclusion. See, what has happened is that clean energy costs have fallen much faster than anybody has anticipated. So the cost reductions have arrived about 15 years earlier than all the scientists or market projections have predicted before. And that's kind of the primary motivation of going for a much earlier target of 2035 and 90% clean. It's purely driven by the favorable economics of grid scale renewable electricity. So I'm not going to go into the details of the assumptions, but the thing to remember is that the economics of clean energy has become a lot more favorable. So then we assessed essentially two scenarios, one without policy and one with policy, and we kind of laid out a technology neutral 90% clean energy standard and assessed the cost benefit and grid reliability. And what we found is that without, although the costs of clean have come down, without policy as proposed in your bill, clean energy investments don't reach their full potential. This is primarily because low operating cost of fossil-based plants because they don't pay for their environmental damages. However, when we put a 90% clean energy standard and let the technologies compete with each other, we essentially find that a combination of solar, wind, existing nuclear, which is important, hydro, you can reach 90% clean electricity by 2035 nationwide. And we looked at some Minnesota results, which I will be happy to share. And in fact, in our model, Minnesota actually reaches more clean energy share because of higher quality wind, say, compared to California. So actually, in our model, we see higher share of renewables or clean energy in Minnesota in the national mix. The second question we get asked is, what about grid reliability? That would this kind of grid be reliable, 90%, because sometimes the wind generation drops significantly. And the bottom line story here is that a cost of battery storage has come down so fast that that becomes a very clear option to do grid balancing. Now, if you had asked me this question 3 years ago, this option didn't exist at scale, which is not the case anymore. So grid reliability can be handled using battery storage. But also we feel that keeping, at least in the 2035 timeframe, some of the existing natural gas plants as backup helps grid reliability. That's one of, so I think a combination of battery storage, hydro, nuclear, and keeping at least some share of natural gas plants around, although they don't operate as much, but as a backup power makes the grid reliable. This is the most exciting finding. This should be of output most concern to the legislators, is that one of the main criticisms of going clean was that it will raise consumer bills. And that's the outcome nobody wants. But what we find in our analysis is that because of dramatic cost reduction of clean energy, the cost of 90% clean by 2035 is actually 10% lower than today. So we don't have, I mean, we have shown that it can be reliable and the cost can be lower. So we have really no excuse to left. And note that we do not count in this analysis of cost, at least on the figure I'm showing on the right-hand side, the 10% hold any environmental benefits. But when we count the environmental benefits, the benefits of going 90% clean US-wide are staggering. We avoid about 65,000 premature deaths through 2035 and about $1.2 trillion worth of avoided environmental damages. So the case is extremely clear in terms of the economics and the avoided environmental damages. And most importantly, in the context of COVID, we also saw that essentially this will require huge infrastructure investments in solar and wind and some investments in grid, and that creates huge amount of net jobs. And that is one of the, we are in such a moment where we have, the economics have become favorable, we need to create jobs, and we need to save the environment. So this investments and aggressive action in power sector provides a perfect opportunity. I will stop here. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much, Dr. Fackey. Really appreciate you being with us today. Our third presenter, before we go to member questions, is Michael Noble, who's the Executive Director of Fresh Energy. Michael, welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, member committee. My name is Michael Noble, and I'm the Executive Director of Fresh Energy in downtown St. Paul. Our mission is to shape and drive bold policy solutions, achieve an equitable carbon neutral economy. We're working together toward a vision of a just and prosperous and resilient future powered by a shared commitment to a carbon neutral economy. So, Mr. Chairman and members, this bill is the most significant piece of legislation that has been offered in this committee's jurisdiction since the 2007 Next Generation Energy Act and the 2007 Renewable Energy Standard. Back then, I guess that'd be almost 14 years ago, reaching 25% renewable energy by 2025 was a requirement, and reaching 30% carbon reductions by 2025 was an ambition. Minnesota has very dramatically surpassed our renewable energy goals, our ambitions in the electric power sector. But so far, we have dramatically fallen short of our ambition of decarbonizing all of the economy. And just the past 2 years, Mr. Chairman, since the original 100% clean energy standard by 2050 was offered and then passed on the floor of the House, so much incredible momentum has been generated toward decarbonization. And the study by Berkeley is really a dramatic example of the momentum that we've seen in just the past 2 years. All of this momentum logically leads us to the bill you have before the committee today, increasing the ambition so that we reach 100% carbon-free electric supply by 2040 instead of 2050, the bill that previously passed the House floor. And the most important change, dramatic change that drives this ambition is the falling costs that Dr. Fadke highlighted. These technologies we're talking about, wind and solar and batteries as kind of workhorse technologies, they all enjoy the economies of mass production where the cost falls and falls and falls and falls and falls the more you deploy them. And that has been very dramatic. In the past 2 years, since the original legislation was introduced, all of the Minnesota utilities continue to surpass the benchmarks in the 2007 laws. And now most all utilities know, and many have publicly committed to reaching a net zero carbon emissions. The reason they're committing is that's where the world is heading. That's where all the companies in the world are heading. In just the past 2 years, very, very many utilities across America, international companies, Fortune 500 companies, cities, and countries, very many have pledged to completely eliminate carbon from the entire economy, so much so that a net neutral carbon commitment by mid-century, that now has been pledged and committed by, are you ready for this? 70% of all global gross domestic product has made that pledge. So that analysis is by the CEO of Bloomberg New Energy Finance, a London-based analyst of energy economics. So this is the most important thing for members to realize. This isn't just a good idea. In the old Wayne Gretzky quote, this is where the puck is headed, and you have to skate to where the puck is going. So these pledges that are made by cities and countries and companies and Fortune 500 companies, these pledges are consistent with the agreement of 192 nations that came together in 2015. And that agreement was rejoined by the United States of America just yesterday afternoon. So as we've heard from Dr. Fadke, two things are very clear. One is that 100% clean energy standard is the cornerstone, really the foundation policy of any effort to decarbonize the entire economy. Because new carbon-free electricity technologies are lower cost than the legacy fossil fuel technologies that they're replacing, we can do this in a way that saves money rather than increase consumers' costs. Number two, I love this logic, is obviously the pathway to 100% carbon-free electric supply crosses the 90% threshold before it gets there. And 90% having a benchmark in this bill thrills me, because that was what was missing from the bill that passed the House floor last time, is there was no 90% benchmark. And so what Berkeley's study has shown, and I might congratulate Berkeley for their work, but this analysis they did is replicated by, I know, at least three or four or five other universities and think tanks and NGOs and private sector analysts, not only Berkeley, shows that the technologies that we're deploying at scale and speed right now, wind energy, solar energy, lithium-ion battery storage, transmission lines, demand response, we should talk a little bit about that at some point. These new technologies, they're falling in cost. When you pair them up with existing hydro and existing nuclear, we can very, very cost effectively reach that 90% threshold much, much, much faster than anyone imagined even a few years ago. It really is true that the 90% is immediately within our grasp and very, very economically. You know, I just might highlight that Great River Energy and the assets they own and they generate themselves will be 95% carbon free in 2 years, and they're doing it and saving their customers massive money. So we will need additional tools above and beyond wind, solar, storage, hydro, transmission. We will need additional tools to get 100% carbon free electricity. We can discuss them in some detail, but I believe there are at least 5 or 6 additional competing technologies that all have the attributes of being dispatchable and firm and add that reliability that natural gas adds right now. And we know these technologies work, but we don't know the cost when deployed at scale. So getting from 90% to 100% maybe takes an extra decade, you know, from 2030 to 2040. I believe we'll get to 90% even faster than 2035 in my candor, Mr. Chair. And again, we can talk about what those technologies are and how they make the grid as reliable as it is today. So let's fully understand that 90% is obvious and economic and clear right now. Let's go there right now. And 100% requires some innovation and deploying. And now we have a partner in the federal government and the United States Department of Energy to help us figure out the pathway from 90 to 100. But by 2040, at the very, very latest, this bill would certainly allow the Public Utilities Commission to get 100% carbon-free electricity faster than 2040 if it's in the public interest and it's economic, and we have willing partners. So we want to be in dialogue with this committee, member, Mr. Chairman and members. We want to be in dialogue about all the topics in the bill, some subjects we have views on that we're not going to discuss today. Trash's renewable energy is a topic that we have concerns about. We're interested in being in conversation with members about the role of nuclear power in the near term. But let me just say, Mr. Chair, that Fresh Energy is incredibly proud that you've asked us to help present the bill today. And in your quest for a carbon-free electric supply, you know, the bedrock principles of Minnesota electricity policy over the 30 years that I've been watching and engaged in helping add value, the three bedrock corners are that it absolutely has to be reliable. We need 99.99, however many nines it is, I can't exactly tell you, but we need it reliable. We need it to be cost effective because we want to compete internationally. Our heaviest industries are very intensive, energy intensive industries, paper and mining and chemical production are heavy industries, but the Fortune 500 companies are all looking at carbon-free electric supply. So it's a matter of international competitiveness. And the third corner of the principles has been improvement in the environment. And now here with your bill, all three of these things, reliability at the highest level, cost competitiveness, you heard Dr. Fatke say that a 90% carbon reduction in his modeling would save consumers, would reduce bills by 10% over what they are today. And the environment, this environment argument is not like a policy advocacy point of view. It's
Mr.
literally-
Noble, if I can- Just ask me to wrap up.
Finish this one sentence, then I'm done. This environment argument is literally where everything is headed, and we need to be headed with it if we're going to be abreast. So Minnesota is a leader on reliability, cost effectiveness, and the environment.
Thank you so much. So we have a few questions and only a few minutes before we have to take a public testimony. So if we could keep them questions and answers concise, that would be appreciated. Representative Munson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you know, my question about, I was reading through this bill, you know, line 5.3 defines what clean energy resource means. And it says renewable energy and energy storage system using renewable energy. You know, it, if wind turbine blades are made from glass reinforced plastic that have no useful byproduct and can't be recycled, and they're being, you know, buried by the hundreds out of state and trucked to heavy trucks, to Wyoming, does this meet the definition of renewable energy? I mean, where are we actually, how far are we looking in this energy supply chain? My concerns as we discuss this and accept public testimony that we really need to talk about. But line 5.13 and 5.16 discusses local job impacts and talks about the jobs from this. But what we're not talking about is that, you know, the 40,000 child slave laborers in the Congo that mine cobalt for the batteries that were just discussed, or the, you know, million gallons of water that's used to refine just one ton of lithium that leaves toxic messes overseas. So I think what we really need to include in this discussion is the environmental impacts caused by these, you know, initiatives that are supposed to be improving the environment. We have, you know, the electric motors and the turbines that use these magnets that are made from neodymium. Again, I mean, nothing in this bill and in the conversation we're talking about the environmental impacts of the products that we're actually mandating under this bill to be used. So was there anything that went into the definitions of this bill that are actually going to be looking at the environmental impact of these products that are being mandated?
That sounds like a question for me, Representative Munson. And so if you don't mind, I'll take that when we come back next Thursday.
To bring amendments forward, Mr. Chair?
Yeah. And I'll be presenting the bill then and be answering questions as long as members would like at that point.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Representative Akam.
Thank you, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you to the presenters. I think the situation that's being presented today is really a win-win. And as Mr. Noble pointed out, with the benefits for reliability and cost effectiveness and benefiting the environment. And if we're talking about environmental impacts, we certainly know full well the environmental impacts of burning fossil fuels. So my question was really about for Dr. Fadke, and you talked about your research coming from Berkeley. I just want to understand, and if you can help point out the relationship with the situation we have here in Minnesota.
So we basically, we looked at our assessment is at the national level. However, to make a credible assessment at the national level, we really have to look very detailed at the state level. So what we have is reliability results, which are pretty granular for Minnesota. What we don't have is we have not done cost allocation for Minnesota. And that's going to require a little more work, but we are pretty confident that the reason why we are confident that these results will actually look more favorable for Minnesota is because our model is actually going further than 90% for Minnesota, where it's going not up to 90% for California. The reason being, it appears that Minnesota has higher quality renewable resources compared to the average in the United States. That's kind of the reason. So I'd be happy to call out some results on Minnesota if that is of interest. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Dr. Fadke. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, my question is either for Mr. Noble or Mr. Renati, is that how you pronounce the last name? Who just spoke?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. We had testimony at the committee here just a while back about retiring the coal-fired power plant up north. The name slips me right now what that is. And they were going to replace it with renewables. And the question came up about a polar vortex that we had a couple years ago where temperatures plunged down to 30 below zero. And according to the testifier, his first name started with a B, Brethke or something like that, he said that polar vortex lasted about 48 hours. And yet with the renewables and the current technology, if we had something similar in the future, the maximum ability to provide baseload electricity with the renewables is 4 hours. That leaves us 44 hours without any rolling blackouts at 30 below zero. We look at California, which is kind of the premier alternative energy state, and we see rolling blackouts, high cost of electricity, and little or nothing done for the environment. So I don't think the technology is there to provide the backup for baseload electricity if we have extremely warm temperatures or extremely cold temperatures. What are your thoughts on that?
Dr. Fackey.
I would say there are three points. The California blackouts were actually caused by some issues with planning, but certain natural gas plants not coming online. In fact, the solar production on the day of the blackouts was pretty high. So I think we just scientifically need to look very clearly what actually happened. As far as the polar vortex and the context of such extreme events, in our study, we do look at extreme events precisely to answer the reliability question, because reliability is paramount. And what we find is that if you look at wind generation across the state, it does drop, but it's not always correlated with polar vortex, meaning that if you have a polar vortex, it doesn't drop wind energy generation. So, and one has to look at this question scientifically, and what we have proven in our assessments, in fact, the chart I showed in terms of reliability is that how the grid would be managed in an extreme event. And we can show confidently that even with greater penetration of renewables and storage, you can manage the grid reliably. So I would be happy to share those extreme event results to the committee if interested. Like, how does, when wind generation drops by 80%, how would the US grid or the grid in Minnesota fare okay? We do have those results. And it's not just our study. The scientific consensus is that you can, if you plan well, deal with this with a combination of renewables and storage. And of course, you do have backup natural gas. And I'll be happy to provide more details. So this question is, of course, you need more planning and effort, but scientifically, the question is quite settled.
Thank you, Dr. Fackey. So, Representative Grünhagen, we're going to have to move to public testimony at this point, and I apologize, Representative Igo and Representative Franzen, we'll put you first on the list when we come back to this topic next week, and we'll have lots of time for question and answer. But we have over 30 members of the public who've asked to testify today, and if they all testified between now and the Energy Committee, we would at least cut off one or two of them. So I'm hoping that we can fit those folks in today. Last year, I had an evening hearing, but we're not doing that this time. So I appreciate everybody's accommodation. And so we will now be turning to public testimony. I'm going to be very strict about time so that we can keep moving through our individuals who would like to testify. So everybody will have 2 minutes. And at the end of 2 minutes, I will be moving on to the next testifier. It is nothing personal. I'm just trying to make sure everybody gets an opportunity to testify. So Our first public testifier who has signed up is Jessica Trish. Jessica, please introduce yourself and begin.
Thank you, Chair Long and committee members, for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Jessica Trish. I'm speaking on behalf of the Sierra Club. We represent 80,000 Minnesotans and power to protect our community's well-being through environmental advocacy. Minnesotans want bold action on climate justice. Thanks to folks across the state calling for climate solutions for decades, Minnesota has made strong progress moving away from coal to clean energy, and the costs of wind and solar continue to decline. Utilities know that this is the direction we must go. Xcel Energy committed to 100% carbon-free energy by 2050, 2 years ago, and Minnesota Power made the same commitment last week. These are very positive steps, yet that timeline is not what scientists say is necessary to avoid the worst impacts of the climate crisis. Now is the time for Minnesota to commit to 100% clean electricity by 2040 and set escalating benchmarks along the way. While Sierra Club would support an accelerated timeline and higher renewable energy benchmarks, this bill is a bold step forward. As we make this transition from fossil fuels to clean energy, we also have an unprecedented opportunity to reshape our energy system and ensure it benefits all Minnesotans. This bill lays out a framework for some of those opportunities for a just transition, including the creation of local family-sustaining clean energy jobs and ensuring pollution impacts to environmental justice communities are considered in energy decisions. This bill does miss one critical environmental justice concern. Minnesota's current definition of renewable energy, which is used in this bill, includes mixed municipal solid waste incineration. Waste incineration can have a devastating impact on the health of nearby communities, often low-income communities and communities of color. We ask the committee to remove waste incineration from the definition of renewables in this bill. So thank you, Chair Long and committee members. We look forward to working with you, the governor and administration, and the legislature to enact bold climate solutions for our state, including this critical commitment to 100% clean energy. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Trish. Under time, we're off to a good start. Kevin Prentice, you're up next.
Thank you, Chair Long and committee members. I'm here again today on behalf of more than 12,000 members of Lyuna, Minnesota, and North Dakota, to thank Governor Walz, Chair Long, and others who worked on this proposal for bringing forward a thoughtful proposal to accelerate clean energy progress by building on the strong foundation provided by Minnesota utilities that have set nation-leading goals for clean energy and carbon reduction. We recognize that this bill is not the final word in the conversation, but at the beginning of that conversation, we think it's important to begin because it's so consequential for Minnesotans, including our members who work in the energy sector, and we appreciate it being started the right way. And I want to explain in 3 points what that means to us. First, this bill takes seriously the workers and communities that have kept the lights on for generations in terms of setting strong labor standards, as well as provisions that require the commission to look carefully at impacts and trying to assign benefits where possible to communities that are going to be impacted by plant retirements. That's critically important. Second, the bill provides flexibility for utilities to meet goals in their own way, using the technologies best suited to meet their needs, including nuclear, carbon capture, large hydro, and other technologies, as well as wind and solar, which have proven to be very effective and able to be provided cost effectively. The third is that the bill provides essential off-ramps to preserve reliability and affordability, because as we all know, I've never heard anyone suggest that they're okay with their power going off or their bills doubling if that's what it takes to get there. This is critical. And I think that I want to say finally that we want to be clear, we wouldn't be here even talking about these kind of ambitious goals if it weren't for the leadership of companies like Xcel and Minnesota Power and Great River Energy that you're going to hear from later, who've already taken huge strides. I know that there's challenges to actually meeting this, but we think that setting our minds to it and setting this as a goal is a good way to think about what we can accomplish further in the utility sector. I appreciate your time and thanks to the committee.
Thank you so much for being with us, Mr. Prentice. Next, we have Rob Scott Hufflin. Mr. Scott Hufflin, welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Chair Long and members of the committee. My name is Rob Scott Hufflin, and I represent Missouri River Energy Services, and we are a municipal power agency that provides wholesale power to 61 municipal electric utilities, 25 of which are located in western Minnesota. Missouri River and its members have made significant strides towards a clean energy future. This fall, we finished construction of a hydropower dam that will provide 24/7 renewable power to our members. We've reduced our carbon footprint since 2005, and we will continue to find ways to further those reductions. We are very interested in working with the chair and the committee as we continue forward on this clean energy path, but we have some small concerns with this proposal in its current form. This bill has both a renewable energy standard and a separate clean energy standard. If Minnesota wants to reduce emissions, the bill should be agnostic as to the type of carbon-free generation and instead focus on reducing emissions. By having a separate renewable energy mandate, which is limited to solar, wind, small hydroelectric, and biomass, the state would put its thumb on the scales to what clean energy looks like today and what it'll look like in the future. This approach could stymie innovation and increase costs for ratepayers if utilities are forced to choose more expensive resources. We are also concerned that this bill continues to place the 100 megawatt cap on hydroelectric facilities qualifying as renewable. Grid-scale storage solutions like pumped hydro will need to be a part of that emission reduction strategy in order to keep reliability high. For example, Missouri River is considering a study on an open-loop hydroelectric project in South Dakota. Such a project, if built, would be well over 100 megawatts. But as written, this bill would discourage such innovation and severely limit the amount of solar and wind generation that could otherwise be installed. Thank you for your time, and we look forward to working with you on legislation that will move forward our mutual goal of clean energy, affordable energy, and reliable energy. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Andrew Davis. Mr. Davis, thank you for joining the committee.
Thank you for inviting me. My name is Pastor Andy Davis. I'm here at Union Presbyterian Church in St. Peter, and I'm with Minnesota Interfaith Power and Light as well. I speak in favor of this bill because it will help our communities thrive. As a pastor, I have relationships with other clergy across the state, and we have deep concerns for our communities. You've heard persuasive testimony that this bill will encourage economic development in rural areas across the state. These will be interesting and important jobs in infrastructure, new wind farms, solar gardens, and other such clean energy solutions. But these just won't be jobs. It won't just be income. It'll be jobs to create a better future for our communities. Workers will have a sense of pride, a sense of contributing to a better future for all of us, a sense of spiritual fulfillment that I think is very important. So as you consider this bill, consider the importance that this kind of work will have on the spiritual growth and sense of community and pride in our communities across the state. I speak in favor of this bill. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, we have Jim Falk. Mr. Falk, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman Long and members of the committee for allowing me the opportunity to testify today in support of this bill. As a member of Land Stewardship Project and serving on their Soil and Health Committee, I want to express to you how important it is that we set aggressive goals to address climate change. I'm Jim Falk, the fourth generation family farmer from Swift County on our family farm, and farm with my son Andrew, who's the fifth generation working our land. Together, we currently own and operate roughly 1,200 acres. In addition to our farming operation, we operate a seed clinic facility, Falk Seed Farm, Inc., and started that business in 1985. In 2016, we installed 30 kW wind turbine on our site, and in 2017, we installed 33 kW solar on site. Together, these two renewable energy systems are providing approximately 73% of our seed plants' energy needs on an annual basis. I had the distinct honor of testifying on July 23, 2020 in Colin Peterson's Ag Subcommittee on Commodity Exchange, Energy, and Renewable Communities about the importance of on-farm renewable energy. Let's be honest, climate change is real, the facts are not disputable, and farmers can be and want to be a big part of the solution. Producing renewable energy on-site is the most efficient use of that energy. Again, not a disputable point. Local distributed generation systems work and are the most efficient use of our energy on the grid. It's not a partisan discussion. It's an economic, data-driven discussion that benefits everyone as we work through the solutions to address climate change. As a farmer who has two renewable energy systems in place, I know the benefits long-term to my operation. So it's time to step up, be realistic about the future, be real leaders. We can all be part of the solution by embracing the benefits of renewable energy. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Marco Hernandez. Mr. Hernandez, welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Marco Hernandez, and I'm the Public Policy Director at COPAL. I'm also a member of the Governor's Advisory Council on Climate Change, but will speak on behalf of COPAL today. The climate crisis continues to impact everyone in our state, frontline communities more than others. Minnesota's winters are warming 13 times faster than our summers, and there are growing extreme weather patterns as well. In 2018, the state suffered 10 natural disasters that impacted 49 counties and cost the state $40 million. We need to pass a 100% clean energy bill to combat the climate crisis. But there is a part of the bill the state does not need and should be amended off this bill. trash incineration should not be considered as a renewable energy source. Municipal solid waste incinerators like the HERC in Minneapolis are large emitters of toxic air pollutants that are detrimental to human health, heavy metals, dioxins, lead, mercury, nitrogen oxide, and particulate matter. Notably, long-term exposure to particulate matter has been shown to increase the risk of death from COVID-19. Mr. Chair and members, when we hear testimony from pro-incinerator lobbyists on the benefits of incinerators, please ask yourself two questions. Did they grow up near a trash incinerator? Do they currently live near one? Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we're going to hear from Megan Hassett. Ms. Hassett, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and the committee. I'm Megan Hassett. I'm a Midwest Clean Energy Advocate for the Union of Concerned Scientists, which has over 6,800 supporters in the state. I want to thank Governor Walz and Chair Long for their leadership in proposing this bold, aggressive initiative. This proposal is a level of ambitious climate leadership Minnesotans need. Current climate science tells us we must have global carbon dioxide emissions by 2030 and reach net zero by mid-century. Aggressively pursuing a carbon-free power sector is key to decarbonizing all sectors. Minnesotans are facing a climate crisis in addition to an economic and public health crisis, which has exposed existing racial injustices and socioeconomic disparities. This policy would make Minnesota a leader in addressing these overlapping crises. UCS commends the inclusion of interim renewable energy targets. Wind and solar are the most cost-effective electricity sources in Minnesota today, and aggressive renewable energy standards enable Minnesotans to access health and economic benefits, including jobs, investment in communities, workforce development, and cleaner air. We recommend strengthening and accelerating the interim renewable targets to ensure all utilities have backstops to current pledges, reason to add more renewables in current plans, and reevaluate plans for new fossil fuel energy so Minnesotans don't end up trapped with gas infrastructure undermining our clean energy transition. A just transition is critical, and we thank Chair Long for including local benefits language to ensure environmental justice communities are included in and benefiting from the energy transition. We recommend specifically prioritizing emission reductions in communities overburdened by cumulative impacts of pollution and removing solid waste incineration from this bill. Waste incineration is not a climate solution. Burning waste for energy contributes to global warming and pollutes communities near incinerators. We can't afford to leave any community behind or disincentivize building new renewable energy. Thank you, Chair Long and Governor Walz, for taking this massive step, and we look forward to working with you all towards an equitable 100% clean energy future. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we're hearing from Linda Herron. Ms. Herron, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Long and committee members, for this opportunity to speak to the 100% Clean Energy Standard Bill, which promotes 100% renewable energy to power our electric grid by 2040. I may not be here in 2040, but my grand and great-grandchildren will inherit the planet I leave behind. I am informed by the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which tells me that we humans have 10 years or less, given the pace of climate change, to avoid the worst-case scenario of environmental and human devastation due to increased occurrences of violent storms, floods, and resultant destruction of human life and infrastructure. I have lived in Minnesota for 50 years and have experienced climate change personally, noting warmer and less snowy winters, hotter and drier summers over the years. I believe that we must move faster to reduce our human-caused climate change by reducing our greenhouse gases from fossil fuel sources and become more conservative in our use of the resources of our beautiful state of Minnesota. I also believe that in addition to a commitment to a transition to 100% renewable energy by 2040 at the latest, which this bill proposes, we must consider the following as imperative parallel requisites. Improve building construction standards to reflect greater efficiency. Invest in electrification of vehicles and homes. Prioritize the communities most impacted by climate change and pollution. Support new infrastructure to enable a carbon-free future. Re-examine the definition of renewable energy, which cannot add pollution in any form to the environment. Finally, I believe that Minnesotans care about the future of our state as I do, and the impact of climate change on all of its citizens. I ask that you consider this bill and support the provisions that promote a fossil fuel-free, pollution-free, and renewable energy-driven future for generations of Minnesotans to come. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we're hearing from Karsten Finholt. Mr. Finholt, welcome to the committee.
Good morning. I'm Karsten Finholt, a student at Carleton College in Northfield, Minnesota, and one of the leads in the Sunrise Carleton Hub. In 2040, I will be 39 years old, and I spend a lot of time worrying about what my life will look like that far into the future. Growing up in the shadow of climate change, I have always been promised that my future is still bright. But then there is reality. Wildfires, floods, storms, pandemics, the promise of a bright future so often feels empty. When we think about the effects of climate change, we cannot overlook how it has destroyed my generation's optimism and energy for the future. We have been forced to spend our whole lives staring down catastrophe, resulting in a feeling of hopelessness that is absolutely crushing. Climate reform, like the 100% bill, is an essential investment into the emotional well-being of America's youth. It is a promise to us that the world is still worth living in and still worth fighting for. Except young people are done with empty promises, and we won't settle for half-hearted solutions. Minnesota must adopt completely clean and renewable energy sources by 2040. This is the kind of meaningful, comprehensive action that my generation is calling for. It is the kind of action that guarantees our right to a just and livable future. And we will not back down. No matter how bleak tomorrow may seem, we demand change. In 2040, I will be 39 years old. It's time for you to start worrying about what my life and the lives of your children and grandchildren will look like that far into the future. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Next, we're hearing from Kelsey Johnson. Ms. Johnson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kelsey Johnson. I'm president of the Iron Mining Association of Minnesota. I represent the taconite mines like U.S. Steel and Steel Dynamics and over 150 vendor member businesses who supply goods and services to the taconite and iron mines every day. The iron mines provide the basic minerals needed for the many of the climate goals and infrastructure needed for a green economy. Our industry is one of the largest consumers of energy in the state, utilizing power 365 days a year, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Our energy partner, Minnesota Power, recently announced the achievement of 50% renewable energy, and we congratulate them for that achievement. Many of the testifiers in this committee and previous committees have explained how each utility and business is already achieving and surpassing the goals laid out in current Minnesota law without any new legislation. The free market has worked to advance clean energy goals further and faster than the original authors of the renewable energy objectives. That's why Minnesota Power and others were able to accomplish a higher standard of green energy faster. The free market and the ability to bend toward economical solutions for each utility at the time of their investment worked. The two major things that the committee should consider is to provide for all energy options available on the market, open the definition of clean and renewable energy to include large power hydro, also international, and to include all other available and viable energy options. Preventing utilities from making decisions based on the best and most cost-effective choices for their customer base will further harm reliability, affordability, and the competitive pricing that is guaranteed in state statute. Secondly, instead of pursuing this legislation, ensure that Minnesota is not one of the highest cost states for energy. Strengthen statute 216C.05. It is the policy of the state that it will reduce utility costs for businesses and residents, improve the competitiveness and profitability of Minnesota businesses, and then further directs the PUC in subdivision 4 to provide retail electricity rates for each
customer
be at least 5% below the national average.
Thank you. Next, we are hearing from Isaac Orr. Mr. Orr, welcome to the committee.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Isaac Orr, and I'm a policy fellow specializing in energy and environmental policy at Center of the American Experiment. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I commend all members of the committee for their sincere interest in leaving the planet a better place for future generations. However, this bill's reliance on mandating the use of unreliable wind and solar will leave Minnesotans vulnerable to the rolling blackouts that affected California in August 2020 and caused electricity rates to skyrocket. On August 14th and 15th, 2 million Californians lost power during a heat wave because the state has shuttered much of its reliable coal, natural gas, and nuclear fleet. California's grid operator said there was not enough electricity to meet demand because of a 1,000-megawatt drop in wind production and the setting sun, which rendered California's solar panels incapable of providing the much-needed power. If we follow the same steps as California, we will suffer the same fate, but with worse consequences. The polar vortex, or the power grid, must remain reliable during the most extreme weather events. In Minnesota, the polar vortex of 2019 was a close call. Energy demand surged as temperatures were negative 29 degrees Fahrenheit, but it was too cold for the wind turbines to operate, and Xcel Energy solar panels were covered in snow. Minnesota's coal, natural gas, and nuclear fleet carried the day. Minnesota's electricity prices have increased 23% faster than the national average since mandating renewables on our grid in 2007, and Xcel Energy is planning to raise rates by another 20% in the near future to pay for the construction of wind, solar, and natural gas power plants. This will cost the average Xcel customer $220 per year. Growing up, that was my family's entire Christmas budget. So legalizing new nuclear power plants and incentivizing the use of large hydroelectric dams and carbon capture are the single most important things we can do as a state to provide reliable, affordable, and carbon-free energy in that order. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, we're hearing from Benjamin Stafford. Mr. Stafford, welcome to the committee.
Good morning, committee and Chair Long. My name is Benjamin Stafford. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for Clean Energy Economy Minnesota. We want to thank Chair Long, leadership of Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan for advancing this clean energy legislation. This is the definition of bold policy, and we're pleased to convey support of Minnesota's clean energy business community for this bill. Clean Energy Economy Minnesota is an industry-led nonprofit organization dedicated to growing the business ecosystem for clean energy in Minnesota. Our membership consists of more than 40 clean energy companies, ranging from startup businesses to Fortune 100 and 500 companies, which employ thousands of Minnesotans across the state. Simply put, we are the business voice of clean energy. We support this bill for three reasons. We believe it creates investment certainty, it ensures benefits for communities in transition, and it delivers on a broader perspective of delivering a clean energy economy across the state. While advances in technology and business models are driving down the cost for clean energy, strong policies are still needed. Commitments to clean energy means investment certainty for the businesses providing and receiving clean energy solutions across the state. Those investments in clean energy are also a down payment for good jobs. Prior to the COVID-19 pandemic, Minnesota was home to over 61,000 clean energy jobs and growing, in fact, at a rate 2.5 times the rate of the rest of the economy as a whole, according to our 2020 Clean Jobs Midwest report. After the pandemic, we've also seen job losses in our sector, and the clean energy job losses are about 13.8% since the start of the pandemic. While we know that is grim news, and a lot of other colleagues in other economic sectors have faced that as well, we believe that our sector is poised for recovering growth. Policy certainty helps create that path for recovering growth. Lastly, our businesses know that climate risk is business risk. Businesses know that their investors, customers, employees, and stakeholders expect them to have sustainable operations going forward. State policies that support this progress send a signal that Minnesota is open for business. In the end, we believe that this bill contemplates a lot of difficult things and creates economic opportunities and benefits for all Minnesotans. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, we are hearing from Ken Brown. Mr. Brown, welcome to the committee.
Chair Long, I'm Ken Brown. I'm on the county board in Olmsted County. I'm here on behalf of Minnesota Resource Recovery Association, Association of Minnesota Counties, Minnesota Intercounty Association in Olmsted County, of course. The resource recovery facility we have in Olmsted is a critical component of how we manage our waste. Waste management is a core mandated responsibility of counties all over the state, and we need to hold that dear. In the early 80s, Olmsted County had a landfill that was qualified as a Superfund cleanup site. That site, failing landfill, threatened drinking water and an aquifer that was there. We have then since made a concerted effort to manage solid waste above ground rather than below it. Waste energy is a proven technology across Minnesota, across the globe, across the country. If you look at, been in operation for over 30 years, if you look at the coming out the top of the stack, it exceeds federal and state guidelines for clean air. So I'd take exception to everybody's articulation that this is a dirty process and ask them, would you prefer that we put it in the ground? We have generated waste over those 30 years. 90% of the waste is not recycled. that is not recycled is kept out of the landfill. We generate 34 million kilowatts of electricity annually. We've saved over 2.5 million tons of garbage out of the landfill. This would have required us to site an additional 3 landfills the size of what we have now currently in operation since 1987. Right now, that landfill has an extended life of about another 30 to 50 years at the current rate. No property tax dollars are used. The system is paid for by user fees, energy sales, sale of recyclable materials. So we manage it close to where it's produced because the county takes on the liability once it hits the end of your driveway. It's a critical component. We divert about 120,000 tons annually of waste from our landfill. And we know zero waste is the ultimate goal, but until we reach that goal, resource recovery facilities must be a viable option to provide effective, efficient, environmentally focused waste systems for all of our residents. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we are hearing from Mike Berglund. Mr. Berglund, welcome to the committee.
Good morning. Thank you, Chairman Long and members of the committee. I am Mike Berglund, and I'm the Executive Vice President for Minnesota Forest Industries and the Minnesota Timber Producers Association, speaking today on behalf of the men and women, the thousands of men and women who work in the woods and in our mills, manufacturing essential products that meet our needs on a daily basis and keep us warm on a day like today, and also store carbon for the long term. I'd like to share a few thoughts about opportunities and cost. First of all, opportunities. Our forests play an important role in our energy future. Active forest management is a vital, and it's a natural climate solution. And it's also vital for the health of our forests for the long term as well. Trees are carbon sponges, and they lock up, and wood locks up carbon in forest products for the long term as well. The industry in Minnesota has made significant investments to reduce energy use, to minimize carbon emissions, and also make our mills more efficient. We self-generate at many mills with forest biomass, parts of a tree that are not used in our manufacturing processes that produce heat and steam. We use branches and treetops and bark, things like that for forest biomass, which is a natural part of the carbon cycle. It's renewable and it makes sense. We also self-generate electricity from renewable hydropower. But electricity still, though, despite all that, accounts for about a quarter of our input costs in our mills. And we've reached a tipping point with industrial electric rates in Minnesota. Industrial electrical rates have risen more than 93% since 2002. And in that same span, the forest products industry has seen several mills shut down and more than 2,500 jobs lost in our sectors. In the meantime, we've heard it a little bit earlier that utilities continue to make significant investments in this massive energy transition that's underway. And Minnesota Power, one of our providers in northern Minnesota, is already at 50% and on their way to 100%. So we're well on our way. And it begs the question, why push for more mandates in the utility sector? It's working. We're well past 2007 objectives that were set then, especially if it accelerates costs. In summary, under the category of opportunity, we need all power supply sources and encourage state support for forest-based biomass. And we also need to find ways to keep industrial electrical rates competitive and affordable for the long term.
Thank you. Next, we're hearing from Peter Tegeland. Mr. Tegeland, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Long and representatives of the committee. My name is Peter Tegeland, and I am a policy associate for the Minnesota Solar Energy Industries Association, or MNSEIA. We represent 114 different solar companies or solar-related businesses. I'm here today on behalf of our members to voice support for this bill and to thank the committee for bringing it forward. A move to 100% carbon-free energy will create thousands of good-paying jobs here in Minnesota. Currently, solar is approximately 2% of the energy production in the state, yet it supports 4,200 good-paying jobs. By transitioning to 100% carbon-free energy, Minnesota will be creating thousands of new solar jobs across the state that can't be outsourced or offshored. We're moving in the right direction. Today, Minnesota utilities have already had plans for large solar projects, and we wholeheartedly support them in those endeavors. We do, however, want to highlight an important piece of the policy landscape that we hope is considered as part of any 100% bill or renewable energy standard extension. Minnesota's current solar energy standard includes a small-scale solar carve-out. Distributed solar is not only a more valuable form of energy production for the grid, as we see from the value of solar methodology, but it also creates more jobs on a per megawatt basis. Furthermore, the right to generate one's own electricity is an American value that we should all share. The small-scale solar carve-out will also ensure that popular utility programs like Minnesota Power Solar Sense and Xcel Solar Rewards can continue to spur customer adoption and fight energy poverty for low-income customers in their service territories. In the end, a wide diversity of project types and sizes will bring the best balance of affordability, grid resilience, and economic development. We want to voice our resounding support for this bill and for the push toward a carbon-free future. Thank you for your time and for your willingness to move this bill forward.
Thank you. Next, we're hearing from Rick Evans. Mr. Evans, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. I'm Rick Evans with Xcel Energy. I think from what we've heard already today, it's pretty clear that Minnesota's utilities, our customers, and state policy are moving us in the direction of a carbon-free grid. In Minnesota, we are very fortunate to have an active, transparent, and open process of resource planning decisions that has been in place for many years and will continue going forward. It is conducted by the Public Utilities Commission. This is the process that is responsible for the progress that we've made so far and will be responsible for the progress we make in the future. It fully considers the state of the science in real time. It considers the costs as they change. It considers new technologies as they're developed. It considers reliability, and it considers carbon emissions and all of the various options that contribute to that. As the PCA reported earlier this week in this committee, the electric sector in Minnesota is the only sector that is ahead of where we hoped to be at this point. And that is largely, this success story is largely due to the work that's done in our Public Utilities Commission. The Public Utilities Commission not only involves the utilities, but the environmental groups, the business community, in a very open and robust public system. In our view, this is the best, most efficient, and most effective way to continue on the path, which is gradually approaching consensus, that we need to reduce carbon on our system. It recognizes the science and it recognizes the economics and gives the PUC the ability to examine those and move forward in an efficient and effective way. We believe that legal mandates to achieve goals, which come before we really understand the science and economics of the future, may do more to inhibit sound planning than advance it, and we encourage the committee to look in that direction. I'll just say one word about the renewable energy standard contained in this bill. As Mr. Noble reported this morning, there are five or six technologies, and in the future there may be seven or eight or nine technologies that could get us to a carbon-free future. The focus should be on carbon reduction. It is very unlikely that today we understand what the appropriate level and the appropriate tuning of adding resources like renewable energy. And we would encourage the committee to focus on carbon reduction. I apologize for going over my time. Thank you.
No, thank you. Next, we're hearing from Julie Pierce. Ms. Pierce, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Julie Pierce. I'm Vice President of Strategy and Planning at Minnesota Power. Thank you for the time to address the committee and this proposed bill. Truly an exciting time in Minnesota. As many of you are aware, Minnesota Power recently shared our carbon-free vision and will be working with the Public Utilities Commission and stakeholders as we file our resource plan on February 1st. This plan starts with us already delivering the 50% renewable energy you heard from some of our customers today, outlines our plan to hire renewables and a coal-free system in 2035, and a long-term vision for 100% carbon-free by 2050. We are so pleased to be at this important milestone as we set our course for a sustainable energy future for our customers in Northeast Minnesota. This vision was carefully designed over the course of the last 18 months with broad stakeholder input, engagements, and rich conversations, and we look forward to the continued discussions on this transformational plan. We are also encouraged, as you've heard today, that we are not alone in delivering on these clean energy strategies, making things happen. As you have heard from our other testifiers, Minnesota utilities are leading the nation in our voluntary efforts to move further and faster to transition and reduce carbon from our fleets while staying steadfast in our responsibility for safe, reliable, and affordable electricity. The next steps that we as a utility sector take toward deeper carbon reductions are going to be harder. It will require us all to be innovative, leave all tools in the toolbox, and allow flexibility for each utility to work in its unique circumstance to identify a set of options and timelines that it will optimize for its system. The communities and workers in each of our regions are key reasons for ensuring we get the electric transition right, something Minnesota Power cares very much about and they rely on and trust us for on a daily basis. One quick example that was already highlighted from this bill is the large hydro resources that are an important part of Minnesota Power's renewable portfolio. Today, the increased RES standards in the proposed bill, they would not count towards RES requirements. We need all tools in the toolbox, and we need to allow for flexibility as we advance these rich goals. We aspire to the same long-term goal as the bill's author and administration to thoughtfully and efficiently transition our fleet in a manner that embraces innovation while protecting the safety, reliability of the critical service we provide. We look forward to working on policy efforts that support those ends. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we're hearing from Greg Patton. Mr. Patton, welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Greg Patton, and I represent Great River Energy, a generation and transmission cooperative owned by 28 member cooperatives who serve nearly 2 million people across Minnesota. As the second largest power supplier in Minnesota, Great River Energy actively manages our resource portfolio and has already reduced carbon emissions by over 35% from 2005 levels. Just last spring, we announced plans to shut down or sell our largest coal facility and replace much of the energy with up to 1,100 megawatts of new wind by 2024. Our plan is driven by the economic benefits it provides our member owners and will dramatically reduce our carbon emissions. But there are two things needed for us to make this plan a reality: the wholesale energy market and our gas peaking plants. Great River Energy, like most utilities in Minnesota, participates in the MISO energy markets. All of our generation resources must compete in that market, and all the load we serve is supplied through that market. The market supplies competitive energy when our resources aren't available, like during low wind periods. And it provides flexibility to add more renewables when and where they are most beneficial for our member owners. Much like renewable attributes have been separated from the energy market, so too should carbon attributes. We support policies that allow using wholesale energy markets to meet future carbon standards. Efficient markets help us reduce carbon, and those markets also enable Minnesota to contribute to carbon reductions in other states. Like many, we recognize that renewables can't provide the reliability Minnesotans need 365 days a year. We are relying on our fleet of modern natural gas peaking plants to provide backup power to wind and solar. Because they only run when other generation is unavailable, they have a very low impact on carbon emissions, and exempting them from carbon standards will be critical to maintaining reliability. Minnesota utilities are already far along the path of decreasing carbon emissions, and we look forward to working with you on policies that will enable our progress to continue. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we're hearing from Kara Josephson. Ms. Josephson, welcome to the committee.
Hi, thank you, Chair Long and committee members, for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Cara Josephson, and I am testifying on behalf of MCEA, a nonprofit organization with almost 50 years of experience using law and science to protect Minnesota's environment. MCEA strongly supports the 100% clean energy bill because the urgency of climate change requires us to cut carbon emissions dramatically and rapidly. As thousands of the world's leading scientists agree, we must cut emissions by half by 2030 and to net zero by 2050 in order to avoid the worst consequences of climate change. Unfortunately, as a state, we are not even close to reducing emissions to the level that science requires. The greenhouse gas report released last week by the MPCA shows that we have only reduced emissions by 8% statewide since 2005, and we're falling short of meeting our Next Generation Energy Act goals. We must act boldly and rapidly to help ensure our children and grandchildren have a safer and healthier future. The good news is that since the Next Generation Energy Act and the Renewable Energy Standard were passed in 2007, Minnesota's utilities have proven that we can provide affordable and reliable power for Minnesotans while cutting carbon emissions. While the other sectors of the economy have fallen behind, the electric sector is the only one currently meeting its share of our carbon reduction goals. This bill would play to our strengths and ensure that the electric sector continues to decarbonize quickly and completely. This is necessary not only to reduce emissions from electricity generation, but also to decarbonize the other sectors of the economy as we work to electrify transportation, heating, and other end uses as quickly as possible. MCEA supports this bill's ambitious approach towards cutting emissions and moving to 100% renewable energy. However, incentivizing renewable energy must not come at the expense of environmental justice communities. Mixed municipal solid waste incinerators, or more accurately, garbage burners, are not Minnesota's clean energy future. Rather, incinerators create a health risk to surrounding communities, and all too often, these types of facilities are located in overburdened environmental justice communities. For these reasons, MCEA urges that the bill should be amended to exclude municipal solid waste incinerators from the bill's definition of renewable energy. In conclusion, MCEA thanks Chair Long and Governor Walz for sponsoring this visionary and necessary legislation, and we encourage the committee to support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we're hearing from Annie Levinson-Falk. Ms. Levinson-Falk, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Annie Levinson-Falk. I'm the Executive Director of the Citizens Utility Board of Minnesota, or CUB. CUB is a nonprofit advocate for residential and small business utility consumers. And we look at legislation from the perspective of how it will affect Minnesotans and take positions on bills through that lens. I'm here today to speak in support of this bill. The bill puts Minnesota's electricity system on a path that CUB believes is both achievable and in the best interest of consumers. Previous testifiers have referenced a number of studies and utility plans that support the milestones in this bill, and I won't repeat that. But CUB has also done our own analysis here in Minnesota that backs the timeline in the bill. As a part of Xcel's integrated resource plan before the Public Utilities Commission, CUB is conducting detailed utility system modeling to find the combination of resources that results in the lowest cost and cleanest electricity for Xcel customers. Our findings show that the mix that's optimal from a consumer perspective pretty much matches the milestones in this bill, about 90% carbon-free electricity by 2035. The benchmarks in this bill are certainly aggressive. I'm quite confident that the utilities can reach 90% clean energy without sacrificing reliability or increasing costs. And in fact, we're likely to end up paying too much if we don't use cost-effective clean energy sources. I can't sit here today and say, though, that Minnesota can for sure get to 100% carbon-free electricity on this timeline without issues. That last 10% requires something of a leap of faith with the technology that we have today. That's why it's important to us that the bill maintains the off-ramp that is in law today for the renewable energy standard. If it turns out to be too expensive to meet the milestones in the bill, or if it would compromise the quality of service that Minnesotans rightly expect from their electricity providers, the standards would not be enforced. This bill makes sure that Minnesota's electricity system is decarbonizing at the pace that's required. It builds on the knowledge and the plans of our utilities, and it does so while protecting Minnesota consumers. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your leadership and for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you. Next, we are hearing from Joel Johnson. Mr. Johnson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Joel Johnson, and I'm here on behalf of Minn Kota Power Cooperative, not-for-profit generation and transmission cooperative that serves power or provides power to 11 distribution member-owned distribution co-ops in northwest Minnesota and northeast North Dakota. Minn Kota also serves as the operating agent for the Northern Municipal Power Agency and its 12 associated municipal utilities. Like others, I think we recognize that the electric utility sector has continued to make progress above and beyond mandates that have been set in law. And I would note that they've been doing it in a way at the timing that works for their consumers and with the type of technology that works for it. Minn Kota currently gets about a third of its energy capacity from wind and another 10% from hydroelectric. We're also pursuing carbon capture and sequestration at the Milton R. Young plant in center North Dakota. Project Tundra has already attracted a great deal of federal support, and is expected to capture between 90 and 95% of the carbon emissions from its flue gas at the plant. If constructed, Project Tundra would be the largest carbon capture technology on a power plant in the world. We have a number of concerns with the bill, including the ability to maintain reliable and affordable resources in the power generation mix. But our biggest concern is that the bill does not include carbon capture technology or recognize the role that carbon capture technology will play in decarbonizing in the future. You know, United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change has run a number of models, and we need to have carbon capture to meet to keep temperatures below 2 degrees centigrade in the future. Finally, this one size fits all doesn't recognize the differences between electric utilities and state. Differences like size, business model, borrowing capacity, and we believe that the bill needs to address that. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we're hearing from Jose Avalar. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Long and members of the committee for allowing me the time to speak today. My name is Jose Alvillar, and I'm a lead organizer for Unidos Minnesota, a grassroots organization that works with youth and young adults. I'm here today to express my support for the 100% clean energy bill. As a youth worker, I often find it inspirational and hopeful to be surrounded by brilliant minds, by our current and future leaders, if I'm being honest, who have been doing a lot of the important work towards a beautiful future for all our communities. However, I don't think that we have been doing our best in listening to them and listening to our BIPOC communities. As many might know, we are not on track to meet greenhouse gas reduction goals. And this is important because the next few years will be critical as we address some of the climate crisis we are living in. And for that reason, I truly believe that we have an opportunity to do this right this time around. I say this because as a youth worker, I want to be able to look into the eyes of my youth and tell them that we did everything in our power to ensure a prosperous future for them, that I and everyone here did not sit idly by and wait for things to get worse, that when it was time for us to act, that we did so. And we did so by ensuring equitable access to renewable energy for all our communities, as well as ensuring a just transition for all, regardless of where they live, regardless of zip code, regardless of age, gender, or language spoken. For those reasons, I support this bill and believe that this is a step in the right direction to ensure a better future for all our communities. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, we're hearing from Chris McCann. Mr. McCann, welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to testify. My name is Chris McCann. I'm an environmental engineer and executive director for the Prairie Lakes Municipal Solid Waste Authority. We are owned by five counties, Becker, Clay, Otter Tail, Todd, and Wadena. We operate a 54,000 ton per year waste combustion facility in Perham, Minnesota. Prairie Lakes was formed with the purpose of managing waste. It was not formed to generate electricity. We use combustion as a critical tool in our path towards zero waste. Prairie Lakes was created by five counties to perform a public service. We do not profit from our program. We choose to incinerate waste in lieu of landfilling. This prioritization is recommended by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and United States Environmental Protection Agency. Global leaders in environmental solid waste management, including Norway, Denmark, Sweden, Switzerland, Belgium, Germany, and the Netherlands, have the same perspective. We embrace clean energy and respect for the fact-based solid waste management policies recommended in Minnesota and the United States and our path towards zero waste. Please remember, carbon emissions is only one of many elements in environmental stewardship for soil, water, and air. If waste combustion is discontinued, landfilling will increase. The greenhouse gas emissions and environmental risks of landfills is greater than waste combustion. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for my time. I hope I've represented the need for waste combustion in Minnesota. If I did, you know we are the leaders of Minnesota's efforts to protect our environment. Help us by protecting Minnesota's investments in waste energy.
Thank you. Next, we're hearing from Derek Moe. Mr. Moe, thank you for joining the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am Derek Moe, CEO of the Minnesota Rural Electric Association, representing Minnesota's electric cooperatives. Cooperatives are rapidly decarbonizing. An article in the Star Tribune earlier this week noted that while greenhouse gases from the electricity generation continue to fall, Minnesota has failed to meaningfully cut global warming emissions in nearly every other sector. Recent analysis from the Pollution Control Agency confirmed this, showing a 29% reduction in global warming gases from the electricity sectors and utilities continuing to accelerate plans to transition their generating fleets to cleaner energy. We are in the forefront of combating greenhouse gases while ensuring the reliable delivery of electricity under all conditions and at an affordable cost. We should preserve this progress, foster the ongoing shift towards electricity, and avoid mandates which risk setting us backward. On August 14th and 15th of 2020, Californians saw 500 megawatts of power shut down, intentionally shutting off about 500,000 people, in some cases for over 2 hours. Because the state lacks sufficient controllable resources to cover power demands over the evening period as solar power dissipated. This cautionary tale is further supported by NERC, which is responsible for setting the standards to ensure we can consistently rely on getting heat and light. And their long-term reliability assessment released the 15th of December. They warned that to ensure reliability, grid operators must increasingly balance uncertain loads with uncertain generation. And additional flexible resources are needed to offset the variable energy, such as wind and power. The electric utility industry is in the midst of a historic transition, with rural electric co-ops leading the way, installing over 3,300 megawatts of wind energy in the last 18 years and increasing solar energy by 7 times in the recent few years. Further mandates are not needed to see this transition continue and would result in the risks to reliability and affordability of electricity. We look forward to our continued work together during this ongoing energy transition. Thank you.
Thank you. We're only going to have time to hear from one more of our testifiers. And so those who we didn't get to are our committee administrators reaching out to see if we can have them back next week before we do our markup of the bill and questions for the author. So our final testifier is going to be Dr. Steve Jorison. Dr. Jorison, welcome to the committee.
Hello, and thank you, Representative Long and committee members. I am Dr. Steve Jorison. I'm the head of Northeast Metro Climate Action. We are a community group in the northeast corner of the Twin Cities with members in Senate Districts 39, 42, and 43. Our goal is to raise awareness on the climate crisis and work with our local elected leaders. I'd first like to address the concerns about consistency of renewable energy. The report on the investigation of the California blackouts just came out last week, and the conclusion was that it was the grid management and what they call demand response was the key problem. If you look at Texas, which has by far the most renewable energy on the grid, and is the largest energy user in the United States, and has hotter summers in California. They don't have blackouts. Their grid is managed well and maintained. If you look at the Yale Climate Survey that just came out last week, overwhelming amount of Americans support federal funding for maintaining the grid. 84% of Americans and 81% of Republicans want more funding for the grid. And then if you look at the question here today, 100% clean energy by 2050, 72% of Americans and 52%, a majority of Republicans in that same survey, support federal funding for a 100% clean energy goal by 2050. Those survey numbers have gone up in recent years because the need for systemic change is increasingly obvious. One in three Americans live in a city or state that currently has a 100% clean energy goal by 2050. We should add Minnesota to that list. It's the right thing to do for our economy, for our environment, and for our health. The time for bold action is now. Thank you, Representative Long and Governor Waltz, for supporting this bill.
Thank you. Thank you, committee members. Thank you to all of our testifiers today. We are out of time for today. Just to mention that next week, in addition to our two committee hearings, you'll be receiving a notice from our committee administrator that on Wednesday, members of this committee are invited to join the Preventive Health Committee for a hearing on climate and the impacts on public health, and that on Friday, we will be having a joint committee hearing with the Capital Investment Committee. With that, the meeting is adjourned.